Welcome on in. It is a good Monday. Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports. We partner with the Arizona Republic. I'm Brad Sussmat. Coming up on today's show, Tom Brenneman here in a couple of minutes. We'll talk with Tom. 3 weeks in a row, the voice of the Cardinal games on television. Tom has seen them against the Bears, against the 49ers, and in yesterday's loss to the St. Louis Rams. I also want to talk to Tom about his view of Carson Palmer. Of course, Tom is in Cincinnati, so I want to talk to Tom about that. Paula Bovin at 10:35, news and notes, AZ Central Sports columnist. Paula was at the Arizona State win over UCLA, and she was at the Cardinals game yesterday. And then Rudy Carpenter is going to join us in studio for a couple of minutes. The former ASU and NFL quarterback weighs in on the development of Mike Bercovici, ASU's win, and much, much more. I had a really interesting weekend. I went down to the Suns for their open scrimmage on Saturday night. And there were a lot of people there. I was at the Cardinals game yesterday. On the Cardinals front, very disappointed in how that game turned out from a fan standpoint and just watching how it went in the final couple of minutes. I watched all the ASU game back because I was out at the Suns and watched it back. And the Kalen Ballage run will go down as one of the great plays that you'll ever see if you're a Sun Devil fan. And then I watched quite a bit of U of A just get demolished. It was on the Pac-12 network, so most of you didn't see it. I did. It wasn't pretty. And I saw Martian over the weekend, too. So there was a good weekend. It was a good weekend overall. But let's start on the Cardinals front. So when you make mistakes in the red zone and not able to capitalize, you have to settle for field goals. And when you have balls that are dropped that should be touchdowns, and when you have overthrows by your quarterback, I didn't really see much yesterday that I looked at and said, boy, this is really good. This is really solid football. Calais Campbell was really good yesterday, was terrific yesterday. And outside of that, I don't know. I mean, the Cardinals got screwed on the Benny Cunningham fumble. It was not, was ruled not. It was a bad call. They ruled forward progress. I don't know how an officiating team can miss a call like that. But if you go through the numbers and just look at it, the Cardinals should have won in every way, shape, and form other than turnovers and missed opportunities. I think that's the only way to put it. So it's a divisional home loss. That is a bad deal. That's a bad combination. You do not lose games at home within your division. And St. Louis just came out and smacked the Cardinals. It was one of the few games for Carson Palmer that I've seen since he's been here where it was a struggle. It seemed like he was out of rhythm. And add to that, and I think we went through this last week more than once, St. Louis is not the 49ers, and they're not the Bears, and they're not the Saints. That's easily the best team that the Cardinals have played so far this year. So, you know, you add it up, and it's one loss during the course of a season. But now they have six of their next eight games on the road. Six of their next eight. And they are at Detroit this week, and then they're at Pittsburgh the following week. So you got to put this one behind you and all that stuff. But the overreaction Monday of, well, Mike Iupati wasn't very good yesterday. Well, Mike Iupati was just coming off of an injury. So he's not going to be at 100%. We have not seen Weatherspoon at linebacker. I don't know. He didn't drop the ball in the flat. He didn't have the ball knocked down in the flat late in the game, a pass that Carson Palmer, I think, makes most times. But it's Robert Quinn that knocks it down. Now, Todd Gurley was very smart in the final moments of the game, knowing when to fall to the turf. He didn't need to score. He knew to run the clock. He knew to grind the clock. So, you know, I'm not going to sit here and do a whole show on what needs to change because, in my view, it's they had a bad game. They ran into a good team. That's a buzzsaw of a defense. There were more heavy hits yesterday and wood being laid out than the last three games combined. Rams can play. And Tavon Austin was able to do something. I was wrong this last week. I didn't see anything out of the Rams receivers. Tavon Austin had been a disappointment. And yesterday, Tavon Austin was really good. On the ASU front, so nobody saw this coming. Nobody saw ASU was going to go to Los Angeles and completely shut down the running game. It was terrific game planning by Todd Graham and the defensive staff. They decided, we're going to have a freshman quarterback beat us. We're not going to let Paul Perkins beat us. And that's exactly what ASU did. They stuffed the run for the most part. Bercovici wasn't great, but he was efficient enough. Norvell was back down on the field. So I'll give Todd Graham credit. I've had the other side presented to me saying, well, he should have never put Mike Norvell up off the field to begin with. Well, you know, when you lose one of your assistant coaches, it's a key part 2 weeks before the regular season. And you try to make some adjustments on the fly. And then you lose one of your running backs as a key component to it. And you try to work through it. You're going to have rough spots. That's the only way that you can describe what's gone on. If I were to tell you guys at the start of the year that Utah-Cal would be the marquee game and be picked up by College Game Day, you would have said, absolutely not. There's not a chance. But yeah, the second Pac-12 school picked for College Game Day first was the U of A, and now it's Utah this week. So the national stage will be on that game. Who would have thought? I mean, if you go through the Pac-12 and look at games, I'm watching Colorado after a lightning delay with Oregon, and that game was a 17-17 game. Colorado's coming here this week to play Arizona State. That is a trap game. There's no other way to put it. It is a trap game. And they'll deny it, and people say, oh, no, we should roll all over Colorado. You have Utah the following week at Utah. Are you kidding me? This is a trap game. So there were a lot of positives to see Kalen Ballage run with the football. Do we have the video of that, or are we saving that for the TV show today? What are we thinking on the TV show? Are we? Okay. All right. Maybe we should pull some of it later in the show if we can. If we can, it's fine. TV show is tonight at 6 o'clock and 10 o'clock on Fox Sports Arizona, by the way. Eric was down in Texas over the weekend. You flew in for all of, what was it, 12 hours, and the game was over, like, I don't know, 10 minutes into the game?
Yeah. It was a good trip, though. It's always good to go back to Texas. And especially when TCU beats up on Texas. And Texas is just really bad. I mean, we could do a whole show on just what's going wrong.
Do they need
Texas
to fire him?
Oh, I go both ways on that.
The more I watch them, I think they need to. I don't see where they're getting any better.
You heard the story behind the story of the kid, the player that went in at halftime and checked his phone. And he had some A&M fans tweeting him about, hey, why don't you transfer to A&M? And the kid, like, retweeted the tweet. It's halftime. You're playing a game. You're losing 37-0. Stay off your phone, please.
How does that happen?
Lack of discipline.
How does that happen?
Players checked out.
So again, I ask the question, do you just need to take a broom? Did you make a big mistake when you brought Steve Patterson in and he hired Charlie Strong? Because if you have players on their phones at halftime when you're getting drilled.
Not good.
And they're retweeting stuff. I mean, come on. Does this just not make any sense at all? And you just got thoroughly embarrassed. Like, it's a setback. If you're a Texas coach and you have TCU and you have Baylor walking in on your high school players, where are you going to tell your players to go? You going to tell your players to go play? That's why I still believe that job's going to come open at the end of the year. And Northwestern and Michigan is this week. That's an improbable matchup. The Diamondbacks today blew out their pitching coach, Mike Harkey. Their season ended. I was wrong. I had 84 wins. They finished with 79. They had a 15-game improvement with Chip Hale and Dave Stewart, but today they fire Mike Harkey. And I have to wonder if behind the scenes, there was some stuff there with some of the young pitchers that they just didn't like. Pat Murphy's not asked back in San Diego, and Matt Williams was fired today. So a lot of Arizona angles around the baseball front. But on the other side, Tom Brenneman from Cincinnati. He called the Cardinals game 3 weeks in a row. And I want to know what his view of Carson Palmer is being back in Cincinnati now. Carson made some comments last week that were interesting. Tom Brenneman is next. Then Paula Bovin. I'm Brad Sussmat. Let's dive a little deeper into the Cardinals' loss yesterday and a little bit of an overview. Tom Brenneman with Fox, of course, a longtime Valley broadcaster, is with Fox doing his thing back in Cincinnati now, did the game yesterday. The last 3 weeks, Tom and Charles Davis and Tony Siragusa have been able to get a closer look at what the Cardinals are all about. Tom, first off the top, what struck you most about yesterday's Cardinals loss to St. Louis?
I thought it was a great game, Brad. I mean, I don't know how anybody else felt about it. And obviously when your particular team loses, regardless of what town you're in, you don't look at it as a great game. But if you're just sort of a spectator and not rooting necessarily for one team or another, I just thought it was a really, really exciting game. There obviously wasn't much offense, but sometimes that doesn't mean it's not a good game, at least in the first half. And at the end of the day, the Cardinals just made too many mistakes. When you're playing tight games, you can't turn the ball over. There were some plays they left on the field, mm-hmm. you know, whether it was Johnson dropping a pass down by the goal line, Jermaine Gresham dropping a ball, and then, you know, two open receivers on that final drive when a field goal wins it, and Palmer doesn't make the throw. And he's made a lot of great throws this year, but on those last two downs, he had open receivers and missed them.
You've been around now 3 weeks with this team in meetings and Arians and Harold Goodwin and James Betcher and coordinators and all the preparation. Three straight weeks, what strikes you about this coaching staff?
Well, they know what they're doing. I mean, you know, I think around the league, and there was a long time, Brad, you mentioned that, you know, I was living in Arizona and announcing the Diamondbacks games, and there are a lot of years that obviously while I was living there, I was following the Cardinals, and it was not a good organization.
Yeah.
It's not to knock any one particular person or persons, but I think it's probably safe to say in the entire history of the franchise since moving to Arizona that they are on the most stable footing they have ever been on in every way imaginable. Ownership, commitment to winning, general manager who's done an incredible job in a very short amount of time, head coach, had two outstanding coordinators. And that's what being a great head coach is all about, is when your coordinators get hired to go to other places and become head coaches. And then you've got to replace those guys. So, you know, look, these guys know what they're doing. And they have a quote-unquote winning program going on there in Arizona that if they can keep the quarterback healthy, they've got a chance to be really good, I think, for a number of years.
What's Arians like in a meeting with the broadcasters?
Just like he is with you guys. You know, when he's meeting during the week, he's upbeat. He's tuned into his team. He's excited. He's enthusiastic. He's intelligent. He's reflective. He's just a very impressive guy. I mean, you can understand why, you know, so many people in the Valley are really excited to have him as their head coach. Every time I'm around him, I'm just stunned. And you see this in every sport. It happens with players. It happens with managers in baseball. It happens with coaches in basketball, and obviously football. Every time I'm in the room with a guy, I ask myself the question, how has this guy, quote-unquote, slipped through the cracks for so long to not get a head coaching job until he was in, you know, almost 60 years old?
Yeah, how is it the Bears let him go, didn't even pursue him?
Yeah, I don't know how that happens. I mean, you know, I just don't get it, how that whole thing happened. But, you know, I mean, I've been around Mark Trestman, too. He's a very sharp guy. And I think that, you know, he had at least a proven track record of some kind, albeit in Canada, of being a head coach.
So are you – let me put it to you this way. When I see you and hear you doing Cardinal games, I'm just wondering, what does Tom think about seeing Carson Palmer? Because Tom's in Cincinnati, and it didn't go well in Cincinnati with Carson Palmer at the end. And yet, here he is, fountain of youth, a seventh-round pick from the Raiders. Could you have seen this happening when he was in Cincinnati?
Well, look, you know, to answer your question directly, yes, you could see it happening. You know, I think there were a lot of people in the press. Now, look, the way people feel about the press, they aren't crazy about the press. It's kind of like our politicians.
Sure.
But Carson Palmer last week, when he made those comments about the Bengals owner, Mike Brown, who has been a controversial owner here for a long time, for those who don't know, the son of legendary football coach and figure and owner and founder of the Bengals, Paul Brown. Mike Brown is as good a man as there is on this planet. And Carson Palmer knows that. I mean, this guy has given so many players a second chance, a third chance. Carson eventually became very close with the late Chris Henry, and all the documented problems that he had off the field, had finally turned his life around, tragically was killed. Carson had to deal with a lot of that kind of thing going on here in Cincinnati, where for so long they had the reputation of being a team that had a lot of players that were in trouble. Obviously, that has changed and done a complete 180 in the last 7 or 8 years. They're among the model franchises now as far as winning, players not in trouble, going to the playoffs. They haven't won the Super Bowl. But the point I'm making is, Brad, is that those in the press that were really fans of Carson Palmer, and he is an easy guy to like. He's a stand-up guy. He never alibis. He never makes excuses. He never called anybody out the whole time here in Cincinnati when there seemed to be chaos around him so many times. And he played very well here early in his career. His last 3 or 4 years here in Cincinnati, he did not play well. Now, you can't put all the blame of the franchise on him. But they had some talented teams here. And I think some Cincinnati fans would say, those third and fourth down passes you saw in the game yesterday on the final drive, Cincinnati fans saw that more than once. He had a great career here. People loved him here. But the way he left was just not a good thing. The fans eyed him as a quitter on the franchise. And then last week, you know, when he left, he said, well, one day I'll come out and tell the whole story. And maybe there are some things out there, Brad, quite frankly, that I don't know about. And maybe one day he'll tell us all and you'll say, hey, look, I get it. But to come out last week and to imply that the owner of the team here in somehow or, you know, way, shape, or form sabotaged his career. I mean, let's cut to the chase here for a minute. Carson Palmer, stand-up guy, made the decision he was never going to play another down for the Bengals the rest of his life. God bless him if that's his decision. And he stood by it. But if the owner of the football team here really wanted to send him off to Siberia, right? He just sits here and doesn't pay the guy. He doesn't trade him.
Right.
He doesn't do anything to him. But what does he do? He trades him to another franchise where he knows he's going to get a chance to play. Now, I'm not saying he sent him there in good conscience or good faith. I'm not implying that. But if a player decides he's not going to play and he's not going to get paid, how in the world does that make the owner a bad guy who traded him to another team to give him a chance to continue his career? Is there something there that you see that I'm missing?
No, I was eyebrows raised a little bit, and knowing you've seen in the last 3 weeks, you know, I was surprised by that because he has not said much out here in
any
regard.
Well, I was not going. I will be the first to admit that Friday I did not go to their complex this week after going the last couple of weeks to see them because it's the third week in a row we had seen them.
Right, right.
So the rest of our crew went over there. I did not. I did not go on Friday, and I'm not even sure. If it's in a meeting like that, it's not worth the time to even talk to him about it because, you know, if he wanted to talk even in more detail about it, he would have done so with the writer that that he talked to initially after the game against San Francisco. But I can tell you there were a lot of columns, and you probably saw a number of them, that were written here in Cincinnati where people said, you got to be kidding me. Because people really like him here. Because he's a good man, and he's a good player. And at times he's been a great player in this league, and Lord knows he's never played better in his whole career than he's playing right now in Arizona. And I certainly wish him nothing but the best because he's always been great with us to deal with.
I'll let you go off that, Tom. I appreciate your time and insight as always. Thanks.
All right. Take care, Brett.
Always good to catch up with Tom Brenneman. Appreciate his time. Paula Bovin is next. Sports360AZ.com. That's our website. Plenty of content on Sports360AZ.com, Paula Bovin, and then Rudy Carpenter in studio on a Monday. All right, Paula Bovin joins us now, AZ Central Sports columnist, my friend, for a couple of minutes. She was at UCLA for the ASU win and then at the Cardinals game yesterday. I think the easy way to go would be Cardinals first, but I don't want Arizona State to get lost in the shuffle after all the banging away that people were doing on that program. What'd you make out of the game Saturday night in Los Angeles?
Was blown away, honestly, just because of what I had seen with this team the last few weeks. I think maybe what I was most impressed with was how, you know, say what you want about Graham and all his speaking victory and blowing up his team too much, talking them too big, that his ability to sort of get this team to believe they can do what they did, it sounds so cliche, but was really impressive. And he's done that the last couple years after some bad victories. So you don't want the bad victories. I mean, the bad losses, but the ability to come back with these kind of big victories is impressive.
I can't think of a better win for him. People say the Notre Dame game. What people forget in the Notre Dame game is how awful they were in the second half, and fans were not happy and restless in that game. So to me, it was a signature win for him.
Yeah, I think it really kind of put the brakes on some criticism that was starting to mount.
Yep.
And, And the way they did it, that is good of tackling as I've seen with an ASU team in quite a while. I mean, and it's been a bit of a staple under Graham, who's a defensive guy. But in that game, I thought it was really impressive. And Berkovici, while he wasn't perfect, you know, he's been under a lot of heat, and I thought he made some big plays and big passes when he needed to.
You know, the play calling by Norvell, getting him back down on the field into his comfort zone, it felt to me like he had a better control of the game than he did being upstairs.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's hard to put myself in those shoes because I obviously have never done either, just witnessed it from afar. Mm-hmm. But you're right, there is definitely a comfort, seemed like a comfort level there. And certainly that tempo that they've sort of looked for in rhythm with that offense, this is sort of the first game we've seen it. There were stretches where they were just quick and moving the ball, you know, the run, the pass, whatever they were doing. There was just a far better rhythm than there's been those past few games.
Of course, I told you at the start of the year that Cal Utah would be on game day. And, of course, I told you that would be like the game of the year in the Pac-12 by the second week of October, which I didn't.
Yeah, exactly. You told me that, yeah.
Yeah, of course I did. Could you have seen what's going on here? I mean, the Utah-Cal is getting national run. This Pac-12 this year, I think cannibalism is the way it's going to go.
Yeah, it's, you know, I have to do this thing for the paper each week called Four In and Four Out as far as national playoff teams. It has been impossible, and I put Utah in for this week, but I really struggled because of the way the Pac-12 is going. I mean, you've got Stanford in the mix and the way they're playing, and it, you know, I don't know if Utah can win the rest of their games, but I mean, they deserve, I think, the right to some acknowledgement because of how they played and the victories that they've had. And it's amazing sort of the renaissance of the sports program there in Salt Lake, you know.
Right, right.
With Kostowiak and the basketball team and now football. No, it's pretty incredible.
That's a good point. Paula Bovin with us, AZ Central sports columnist. So I think in Utah's case, it's Cal, then it's ASU, and then I believe they have the L.A. schools back-to-back. So the facts are we're going to know a lot more about Utah here in a few weeks, but that win over Michigan is looking better and better, and I think they do deserve to be a team that is looked at in the top eight, top ten. You know, you speaking of your in and out with those teams on the playoff front, I watched Alabama-Georgia. It was fine. It wasn't anything great over the top. I didn't see anything great there. It seems like the Big 12 has some better teams than the SEC this year. And the Pac-12 doesn't have any team that I'd look at and say, they're spectacular. Stanford's really good, but Rich Rod's undermanned right now. So I'm not going to put too much into that win.
Right, right. Yeah, it's tricky. I mean, you know, I look at TCU, and I think they won by, 43 points over Texas. And I know Texas is obviously not the Texas they were, but TCU's sort of improved defense, and I've been impressed with them. And then you get Florida with that big win. How seriously do we take them? And it's challenging, very challenging right now to pick those teams you're going to see in the postseason.
Okay, on the Cardinals then. So you're there yesterday, and this really isn't that hard to break down from my point of view. When you turn the ball over, or you don't make plays, and you're 1-5 in the red zone, I mean, you're not going to win. That's it. That's just it. So this is not something I look at and say, boy, they've got an inherent problem going on here. This was just running into a team that's defense was better on one given day.
Yeah, no, it's true. And, you know, for those people, and I've seen it on social media, you know, oh, they took their 3-0 start too seriously, too confident. Not true. I mean, all week this team was talking about how good the Rams' defense was. There was a legitimate respect, if not concern, just about how physical they were, you know, how creative they are. And, you know, I can't help but think some of those, like, you know, Carson Palmer had a couple of bad passes at the end. He overthrew his receivers, and he'd been knocked around pretty good, you know. That's a team that blitzes a lot. And, I mean, I think all those factors really contributed to those turnovers and stripping the ball and everything else. So, yeah, there was talk before the season that the Rams were going to be good, and they're starting to show it, I think, here coming up. So
you wrote about David Johnson today, and it's one game. It's two plays that you look at and just say, that's a rookie, and those are two miserable plays to let go through your hands, the fumbled kickoff at the start of the game, and then a sure touchdown in the end zone.
Right.
Was he a stand-up guy about it? Was it took a little prodding? How did he handle it?
No, he was great. I mean, you know, I'm sure it, you know, and I kind of described at the beginning of my column, it's that awful scene. You're standing in the locker room and everybody's starting to collect in front of his locker, but he's getting dressed and he knows what's coming.
Yep.
And you're like, oh, here we go. And yeah, he got dressed, stood up, answered the questions. You know, he wasn't really expansive, but it was sort of a, you know, what more can he say other than I screwed up, I got to watch film and learn from it. He felt bad, you know, and I know that his teammates were going to him throughout the game on the sidelines and offering encouragement. But, you know, we see these guys and we see the money they make and the fame they have, and you sort of forget, you know, he's 23, he's a rookie, and it's happening on this big stage. You know, this kind of stuff are the things that can affect a guy's career down the road. So, you know, it was a stressful and probably miserable situation for him, but he handled it well. I mean, and a nod to that Cardinals locker room this season. I think they've been really impressive answering everything for the most part.
I had Tom Brenneman on before you because he's seen them three straight weeks. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about Carson Palmer and what Tom saw in Cincinnati. And Tom kind of went off on Carson about the stuff that we made comments about the Bengals last week and how Carson had a good support system there. But some of the throws that we saw late in yesterday's game, according to Tom, were throws that he would make in Cincinnati that were frustrating to fans too, which I thought was pretty interesting. What did you make out of Palmer yesterday?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I understand a lot of what Palmer has said and others have said about him in the past, in the sense that, you know, now he's finally surrounded by great talent. He's got a much more supportive management, blah, blah, blah. But the reality is he had to take some of the blame for what has happened in his past, and he did make bad decisions and he did make bad throws and everything else. So I think that, you know, the truth is probably somewhere in between what he says and how the Bengals feel. Mm. But I think, you know, he has been so good this season that what we saw yesterday, I think, was just more a reflection of maybe a guy who'd been hit a lot during the game and just wasn't delivering. But I don't think that is who he is now. I think he's much more the quarterback we saw those first three games.
Okay, 6 of their next 8 are on the road. How do they come back from 6 of 8, in your view? They come back with a couple losses? Is this a 500 team? Did we see some chinks in the armor yesterday? What do you think happens here over the next few weeks?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a tough road. They really, you know, the good thing is they started, I think, in Detroit, right? And they've got to win that game, and I think they will. But I wouldn't be surprised to see them come away with maybe a couple losses on the road. It's, you know, this is the NFL, and it's not easy to win wherever you're playing. So, and it's not end of the world that they do, but they've definitely got to pick up more, I think, more wins than losses, and then they've got to turn it back on when they get home, no question.
Let you go off that. Appreciate your time as always. Thanks.
All right, Brad.
It's Paula Bova, News and Notes, AZ Central sports columnist. Rudy Carpenter in studio on the other side. Stay with us. All right, let's talk further about Arizona State's win with the former Sun Devil great quarterback, Rudy Carpenter. He joins us in studio. And the Kalen Ballage run, let's just start on that play and we'll work in reverse. Have you seen a better run?
I don't know if I've seen a better run, but it was a great run to end a game. He's a great back, and I think really his skill set is what you're looking for in that point of the game. Big, powerful, fast back that can grind out the clock for you.
The win itself, there was a lot of concern, I think justifiably so. What did you make out of the victory Saturday night?
I thought it was a huge win. Anytime you can go on the road and beat a California team or any team on the road is a big deal, but especially a top 10 ranked team, it's a huge deal for ASU football. They looked better on offense. They looked better on defense. I also think they hit UCLA at a really, really good time with some injuries on both sides of the ball for UCLA. And I also think Todd Graham's, you know, pressure, blitzing defense, still early in the year, you know, is a huge benefit with a young quarterback.
So let's talk about Mike Norvell being up the stairs, downstairs, and did you see much of a difference? Did it make that big of a difference to Mike Bercovici on Saturday night?
I think that's people made a big deal about that, and it's really not a big deal at all. I mean, every coach I've dealt with is a preference. Some coaches like to be on the field and get a feel for the game, talk to their quarterback, talk to their players face-to-face, feel the emotion of the game and call plays that way. Some coaches like to be up in the box, see it better, and just be a straight play caller. You know, I don't think it's really a big deal. Obviously, Mike's always been on the field, and I think that's where he feels more comfortable.
Did you like seeing the play calls that came into Burko?
To me, I'm a old school guy, so I still feel like some of this stuff is gimmicky when you're running fumble rooski or stuff like that. But at the end of the day, in the second half, they got into a rhythm, started using some formations, some play callings that fit Burko's strengths. And ultimately with him, I just think you want to get him in a rhythm, quick game, intermediate game, and then let him use his arm to beat some teams.
How's he playing in your view this year?
I think it's tough to assess. It's still early in the year. You know, this offense has always been successful with the zone read, and the quarterback is a big part of that, using his legs and being able to run the ball. You actually saw that early in the UCLA game where Burko pulled a few balls and had some big runs. Ultimately, the defense is not paying any attention to him, so you're not putting those linebackers and defensive linemen in conflict, which is what the zone read is for.
You know, it seems to me that all the angst that was there a week ago gets relieved for 1 week. And Rudy, big picture in the Pac-12 South this year, I think it's cannibalism. I really believe people are saying Utah's the number one team in the country this week. I don't see that. Ohio State still is. But I think by the time we get to the end of the year, there's going to be two or three losses for each team in the Pac-12 South. What do you make out of it so far?
Listen, I think this is like this in every college town, in every NFL town. You have a win on Monday, everything's great.
Sure.
You have a win, a loss on Saturday, and on Monday the sky is falling, and I don't think that's ever going to change. I think you are right with the cannibalism comment. I think that the Pac-12 South is a very good conference, and these teams are going to beat up on each other. I think the Pac-12 in general is a very good conference. The only thing that's going to hurt the Pac-12 is some of those early losses that Stanford lost to Northwestern. Some of those, you know, ASU losing to Texas A&M, some of those losses might add up when you're talking long picture, playoff picture.
Yeah, because if I would have told you at the start of the season, Cal at Utah is going to be picked up as ESPN's game day show, you would have said, are you kidding me? But that's what's going on this week, and there's that much interest nationally in what's going on at Utah.
There's no question. Utah's playing great. I mean, I think Utah is a good example of what can happen if you keep continuity within your coaching staff over a long period of time. Coach Winningham has been there for a long period of time. Through some good and bad seasons, they've stuck with him. That coaching staff has built some continuity with the players, with the community, but also out in recruiting. I think it's good for the Pac-12 too. I mean, Utah's back on the map, Cal's back on the map, ASU is on the map. I mean, U of A suffered a big loss this weekend, but I think it's good for the Pac-12.
How about you? You're training quarterbacks. How's that working out for you? You've gone from the NFL career into post-NFL, and sometimes it's a challenge for guys. How's it working out for you?
It's been awesome for me. Luckily for me, I knew my NFL career wasn't going to last very long, and so this was something that I've always wanted to do, was coach. Coaching quarterbacks is a way for me to coach, stay in the game, but not have to commit to the, you know, 20-hour grind that the ASU coaches or the other coaches are doing. And been successful, you know. Guys like Brad Kaya at Miami having great careers, and then some of the young kids still coming up. Dana Bridge-Gadd from Paradise Valley, Cade Knox at Brophy, and I have a ton of kids in California too. So it's been really fun.
Did you ever see yourself coaching at ASU?
I don't really know. Like I said, those guys, I have a lot of respect for college coaches in general, just because I know the grind. It's a long year. It's a lot of hours they work. Sometimes I feel like I want to get into coaching, and then sometimes I'm content just doing what I'm doing. But if the opportunity ever arose, I mean, I think I'd have to look at it.
You have to itch. You need to scratch that itch.
Possibly.
You're finding a way to do it. Good coming in. Thanks.
Thanks, Brad.
Rudy Carpenter with us in studio. We're back with more after this timeout.